Welcome to the Business Vitality Podcast. My name is Catherine Canty. I am the host and an executive coach. I work with teams, individuals, and leaders to help create measured leadership change. We do that using practical application, and our clients are creating 100% measured results as seen by those around them. Not necessarily what I think or what they think, but what the other people are seeing. And they are being recognized for the hard work that they're doing. If you're interested in learning more about some of the work that we're doing, you can learn more at CatherineCanty.com. I would love for you to subscribe to this show, to Business Vitality. This is my way to continue to pay it forward and share business best practices. Stay tuned and listen to the interview. Thanks for being here. Sylvie DeGusto, you are the founder and CEO of Sylvie DeGusto, found on the web at SylvieDeGusto.com. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm so excited to be here from sunny Florida with you in North Carolina and with everybody out there in the world.
It is. It's so great to have your energy and your positivity. Can you share a little bit about the work that you're doing right now, Sylvie?
I am so blessed and so honored and so grateful that I can call myself the world's first 3D immersive keynote speaker. So if you don't know what that is, I want you to go to a conference with me for just a moment in your mind. And probably you have seen it all, right? A keynote speaker comes out, she has a few stories, adds a few data facts and figures, and then shows you a few slides. And then again, and again, and again, and again. And I thought to myself, the hardest job at a conference is being an audience member, to sit there all day and listen to all those keynote speakers. I want to do something else. And I created a three-dimensional holographic experience. So when I go on stage, the room turns dark and holographic animations swirl around us. And rather than just telling you about brain performance, for example, I walk with you into a 3D holographic brain and show you exactly what parts of the brain are engaged, what happens during a customer decision-making process, or I have some technology tricks. I change my clothing on stage while not really changing it, to show people how impactful a leader's visual appearance, for example, is. I can change my voice, or I can take out my accent that you hear right now on stage. So rather than just keynoting, I take them on a journey and an experience. And I am so grateful and so blessed and so honored that my clients allow to do me that again and again.
This sounds fantastic. We have all been in the audience. We have all sat there for days and days, and it never ends. Wonderful, talented people come onto the stage. Mm-hmm. And for you to have a creative spin to this, I love the creative approach to speaking, to engaging, because mm-hmm. my mother was a school teacher, high school math teacher, yeah. And you always have to come up with new ways to get people to pay attention. Absolutely. So tell me, how in the world did this come about? How did you create this experience? What happened to create that for you?
Several things came together. I had the pleasure to be in corporate, just like you and your listeners out there, for 20 years. And the last 10 years I was in retail and tourism. And I was just blessed to be led by a leader, not by a manager. I always differentiate there, who said that true leadership doesn't happen in our class offices. And he always forced us on a regular basis to go on the floor, to work as a cashier for one day, to walk the logistics centers. And so I have always learned that you need to be on the forefront to understand as a leader how you can be a better leader in your glass ceiling office. And so I force myself very often at conferences to stay and to sit in and be an audience member, not just a speaker, and to look around and watch the audience. The second thing, I was at Cirque du Soleil, and all of a sudden there were horses running across the stage, and I didn't know where they came from and where they went. It was such a blur between illusion and reality. And what I learned as a leader, and maybe you as a business owner, the best ideas I always get outside of my industry. When I look inside of my industry, I get, yes, inspired by other speakers, but then I just try to do it a little bit different, a little bit my way, a little bit with my hue, right, my flavor. But when I look outside, there is where the magic is waiting. And the third, it was the pandemic. The pandemic was a gift to me because after my first virtual keynote, I have to admit, I cried. Because I was just, it was not a Zoom meeting, it was a keynote. That means I look into a black hole of a camera lens. I don't see somebody, I don't hear anybody. And I called one of my mentors and said, if that is my future, I have to quit. I can't do this. And she said to me, well, if that is not your future, then create your own one. And that stuck to me. And so I noticed in myself, and maybe there is some inspiration for you, everybody during the pandemic upgraded their offices with cameras, with lights, mm-hmm. with microphones, with all, you know, all the things that I don't even have nowadays here. Mm-hmm. But I realized if everybody is going to the right, what if I look to the left in the meantime? You know, everybody is distracted over there with the new and fancy things that we need. And certainly really needed during that time. But I paused and I looked to the left and focused more on what is going to happen after the pandemic. One day we're going to come back, and how I spend my time reinventing myself. And yeah, went back to those horses and figured out how did that work.
You caught me. You have a few stories in there that I'm very curious about. One of them is that blur with the horses for Cirque du Soleil, the blur of illusion and reality. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I struggle with that. Mm-hmm. And I don't know about other people, but there's this illusion of what, you know, people or what the news is sharing or what social media is sharing. So you have like mm-hmm. that picture. And then we have reality. We come home. Mm-hmm. And we don't have filters on our face when we walk around the house. Yes. We have on sweatpants, but yet a nice shirt, you know. So talk a little bit about that and how you've mm-hmm. learned to maybe leverage something mm-hmm. that has an opportunity to be leveraged in a new way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, it just happens to be that my core expertise is perception. So I talk about the power of perception on stage and what impact perception has on, for example, a customer decision-making process or on how you are perceived as a leader in an organization. So it just fits perfectly that not just from the topic I speak about, I can also use the method to showcase how we are often tricked by that perception. When it comes to the topics that you address, you know, the reality, there is this famous saying or question, is perception reality, right? And I always tell my audiences and everybody, yes and no. It might not be reality to you, but it is always the reality to others. Unfortunately, the human brain is wired in a way that people always want to be right. We don't enjoy being wrong. So people subconsciously always look for proof. And so the perception that they have of you is always right in their mind. The perception that you have of yourself is always right in your mind. But that doesn't mean that it is right to others. Mind. And so there are always those two sides of perception and reality that I want you to be aware of. It might not be right to you, but it is always right to others.
How do you use that in the customer experience? I've spent many years in sales and I spent many years in operations, but this makes me think about the customer experience or maybe a new prospect that you're calling on. How can you use that or even... Well, let's just start with sales. It's such a kind of a frontline thing.
Mm-hmm. Sales, customer experience. let's go into a hotel for a moment, okay, you and I, because we all travel. Everybody has checked into a hotel at one point in their life. And I want you to walk into that hotel and go to the reception. And for whatever reason, the receptionist is distracted. They don't see you. They don't notice you. They don't give you the attention that you think that you deserve. And finally, they take care of you, but they seem still somehow either distracted or stressed out. And then finally, you get your key and you walk to the elevator, and it seems like the elevator takes forever. And then you walk into the elevator, and the floor at the elevator is dirty. And then you go up on the 7th floor, and you are annoyed because your room is just next to the ice machine. And then you walk into the room, it somehow smells awkward, and you find that little piece of paper that the cleaning lady didn't put away. What just happened is a very, very powerful sources have been working against that hotel and that brand. Or if it's with an individual, it would have been with an individual in sales, for example. And those sources are unconscious bias. We make a first impression within milliseconds. Some studies say it takes milliseconds, others say 7 seconds. Some say you make 11 decisions, some say you make 13 decisions. It really doesn't matter. What matters is we make it automatically without being consciously involved. And then afterwards, our brain does nothing than looking for proof. So your brain was looking for that dirty floor while you totally ignored that everything else in that elevator was clean, right? Maybe on other days when you were in a good mood, you would have thought, oh, I'm so glad that I'm next to the ice machine because then I don't have to walk so far. If that receptionist at the very beginning would have instantly welcomed you with open arms, with total attention, your journey would have been different because your brain then is looking for proof too, because it wants to find all the other factors that speak for that hotel. The same is in sales. We know that the beginning of a sales conversation and the end of a sales conversation are crucial because at the beginning you are setting a tone, and at the end you are setting them up for the final decision, right? What you actually want them to do. And even that is a psychological concept we know about. If I would give you a list, Catherine, of 10 items, or let's say 20 items, and ask you to memorize them, and in an hour I ask you about those 20 items, which ones would you probably remember the most?
The ones at the beginning or the end, nothing in between.
The beginning and at the end. Because our brain is very lazy. It tries to save energy. So while we are still somehow present, our brain is not fully present anymore in the middle, or it is way harder to engage with it, with a lead or with a customer, but it is very aware and very awake at the beginning and at the end. And so if you use that to your advantage, if you use those micro moments in the beginning, unconscious biases are working for you because during the journey, the brain is looking for proof again for all the positive imprints that you made. And you are more likely to leave with a lasting impression at the very end that will help you to get to whatever you tried to achieve.
Could this be used for employee performance?
Absolutely. It can be used with every single human being in every single interaction because we use it every day anyway, millions of times. You and I and everybody else walk through life, and unfortunately, we make thousands of judgments every single day. And based on those judgments, unconscious biases in our brain work either against or for the situation, against or for the person, against or for the employee, against or for the product, against or for the service. Those unconscious biases are heavily influenced by the culture you grew up, the gender identification, by your generation, by many things, and you cannot not be biased. It's just part of our DNA. I think a huge step forward is when you become aware that you are biased and that you have a higher level of self-awareness, that some of the decisions you might make might sound logical to you, but aren't actually not as rational as you think they are, heavily influenced by your biases. Let me throw in one more number. Every single second, our brain transmits 11 million bits of information. Take that number in. 11 million bits of information. But only around 40 of them actually consciously. The rest all happens unconsciously without us being really involved.
So how do we control all of that unconscious impact on mm-hmm. us? Is there a way to retrain the brain?
Yes, self-awareness is the first start, right? It always starts with self-awareness. Unfortunately, since so many leaders are tuning in, I have very bad news for you. I'm very sorry to drop it right now. But as leaders, we often think that the further we are in our leadership journey, the higher we are on the career ladder, the more self-aware we are. And the reality is the opposite. Throughout your career, you become less and less and less and less self-aware. I call it the CEO disease for two reasons. First, again, your brain is working against you too. You just always think that the things that you do are right because you want to be right, right? And secondly, the more people depend on you or have some sort of relationship with you, the less likely they will tell you the truth. So you also don't have anyone up there who really tells you to your face some things that you would need to become more self-aware again. So that is the first step. The second step is, I give my audiences five tools and I call them the ABCDE. Very simple. And if you don't mind, I'll quickly run you through them because they are very practical and very tactical. And those are the tools you already have. You don't have to buy something, install something. They are already in you that you can use to influence someone's biases. The A stands for your appearance, the way you look. Like it or not, humans are visual creatures. They just look at you and they think they know something about you and your capabilities. And there is less about fashion, that is about more the visual entire picture that you create in person, but also online, for example. Your body image, your height, your weight. Do you take care of your body? Yes, the clothes that you wear, your makeup, your hair, the entire visual picture. Because our brain is so lazy, it actually takes a shortcut through the eyes. Mm-hmm. And that's why your visual appearance and your visual intelligence is so important. But to be very clear, looking good is great, but it's not enough. Then there is your B for your behavior, your behavioral intelligence. How do you interact with people and how does your behavior influence those micro moments? Your attitude speaks louder than any word that you can say. You don't even have to open your mouth. Your charisma, your morals, your ethics, your, even if nobody is watching, your conflict management skills, your emotional intelligence, your etiquette skills. How do you really interact, behave with people? Mm-hmm. The C stands for your communication, your verbal and your nonverbal communication. Starting with probably the most important part of communication, which also doesn't include speaking, and it is listening. How well of a listener are you? You know, especially in sales, since you just mentioned it, we have a tendency that we always want to sound interesting. Mm-hmm. we instantly throw all the information at our leads and our customers to make us, our product, our service, our brand sound interesting. What we actually should do is we should sound interested instead. Mm-hmm. Ask questions, listen actively. Your nonverbal communication, your body language, your facial expression, most of the day it runs on autopilot and we don't even think about it, but people see that and notice that. And then, of course, the words that you choose, the language palette, do you have an accent, a dialect, and your written communication, which brings me to your D. And that is something I really want you to listen closely to, because that's something most people underestimate. And that is your digital footprint. Most interactions nowadays happen first in a digital way, and they will determine if you ever meet in person. You send out emails. People Google your name. What do they find on Google? What do they see on your social media profiles? And there is no such thing that part of your social media world is private and personal and the other one is professional. People don't think that way. Whatever they find about you online, they will take into consideration. No matter if you posted it consciously because you shared a picture or a post or you commented or you liked, but there is also this in between the lines, unintentional footprint that you leave behind. Your outdated profiles, are you even up to date? Or why do you post so often per day? Don't you have anything different else to do, something more important? So there are also those, you know, those sub or in between the lines messages that we send. Virtual meetings or the way we meet right now, how do they impact the fact if you and I ever gonna decide to meet in person? And then there is the E, the environment, your physical and your social environment, the living and the non-living things in your life, the car you drive, the house you live at, the vacations you go on, the hobbies that you have. People take all of those things into consideration. And the more you share, the more they know, and the more it will impact their opinions about you. And most importantly, your social environment, the people you surround yourself with, which are not just important for yourself and your mental health and well-being and your personal growth, but they also reflect on you. What do they say about you as a leader? Your family, your friends, your colleagues, your boss, everybody you surround yourself with. And so those are the five tools that I give my audience members that they can influence, not just the way how they perceive themselves, but also how the world perceives them. And then make those unconscious biases work in their favor.
I love how simple yet deep it gets with the ABCDE, appearance, behavior, communication, digital footprint, and environment. Mm-hmm. I think we could probably, everyone could take this and use it as a journaling exercise after listening to something about this, of like what's working, what's not working, and one thing they want to improve upon. Mm-hmm. I love that. And I can't help but notice you've written a few books and there's these beautifully lined up. I love the color. I love the simplicity of it. The consistency. Mm-hmm. It's a great way. The environment that you surround yourself in is very in line with what you're speaking of. Do you mind sharing? You've written how many books?
More than a dozen. More than a dozen, okay. And I always say more than a dozen that I don't have to keep track, but
more than a dozen.
Update everywhere on my website. It's 13 now it's 14. So I just stick with more than a dozen to keep it
more than a dozen, which is extremely impressive.
Thank you very much. Yeah.
When did you get into writing these books? Maybe a little bit about your process, and can you talk about kind of that process?
Oh, I love that question, Catherine, because my first ever book It was around 12 years ago when I decided to write a book. And if you out there are considering to write a book, I highly encourage you to do it. It is a beautiful and painful process alike. But I remember myself, you know, droning over that manuscript again and again and again and again. And it was never, ever good enough for me. And I was never brave enough to really put it out there. And then I went to a conference and I met somebody who I admire and respect highly. His name is Mark Sanborn. He also wrote several books, The Fred Factor. It was the first book that I ever bought when I entered the United States. I landed and I went to the airport, and the first book that I bought here was The Fred Factor. And years later, I was so blessed that I had the chance to meet him. And I told him about my book and the struggles that I had of publishing it. And he pulled me aside and I want you to keep that advice in your mind too, because it was very meaningful for me. He said to me, "Sylvie, nobody cares about your first book, but everybody cares that you have a first book." So off I went and published. Now I have to admit that he pulled me back and also said, "But you need to write a really good second book." And you know, a book in our industry, and maybe also in your industry, is often like a business card. It's an entry ticket. So don't worry too much about the first book being perfect. Try to write a book. You will learn a lot about yourself, your thoughts, how you structure them in the first book, publish it, and then instantly start working on your second book. And so that book that I just shared with you is now 10 years old. And you know, the last 10 years, some things happened. World has radically changed. And when I looked into the thoughts that I had about the world 10 years ago and how the world operates now, I just realized it is not responsible anymore to have it out there. So I fully updated it. I extended it with everything that we have learned in the last 10 years about leadership and perception and image. And I asked Mark Sanborn if he would give me the honor to write the foreword for that really good second book. And he did. And then I noticed something else, that The Image of Leadership in its concept is a wonderful book. And I'm very proud, especially of that new second updated version. But if you are in construction, when it comes to leadership and leadership image and leadership perception, your challenges are very different from somebody who is in financial services. And if you're in financial services, they are very different from hospitality. And if you're in hospitality, they are very different from retail. So I went on the beautiful and exhausting journey alike, and I published 10 special editions that you see here behind me, that are all dedicated to specific industries, from real estate to government, from, as I said, financial service to technology, so that I can serve those leaders in those industries even better.
That is fantastic. And what a unique approach. No one that I've spoken with or have come across have really taken a book and made it industry focused like that. That's fantastic. Yes. Where do you find, as we start to close up, I can't help but think everything that you've accomplished, and you came out of corporate and you've traveled the world, and I saw your website, you haven't even lost a suitcase yet. You have like had wild success with your travels, as far as I'm concerned. Where do you find your time to be able to do this?
Well, first of all, never check your luggage. That's the only secret that I have. Never check your luggage. That's the only reason, because I have never lost the luggage, and I say that on my website. And if something, I have to admit, doesn't fit into the luggage, I just buy it wherever I go, or I'll find a way around it. But never check your luggage. Travel rule number one. Where do I find the time? you know, if you are a leader and an entrepreneur and a parent, that's probably the hardest decision that you have to make every single day. Every single day, it's a challenge. And I wish I would have a solution for you, and I don't. I struggle as much as you do, Catherine, as a dedicated mother and coach and professional with your clients and with this fantastic podcast that you have and all the responsibilities that you have, like every of our listeners. But I heard one piece of advice from somebody in the C-suite of Art Deco, a woman. And she said something that stuck with me that I'm going to share with you, and maybe it helps you as much as it did for me, being especially a parent. Because if I work, it takes me away from my children, and that is the most painful part, right? Usually I don't care if I'm exhausted, but if I'm away and can't be with them, that is challenging. And that smart leader said, or shared with us, a 10-10-10 rule. Every single time I have to make the decision between, do I spend time on my business or with my family? Do I spend time at work or with my children? Apply the 10-10-10 rule on your children. And maybe you can apply it on your spouse or on whatever is on the other side. For me, it's my children. The 10-10-10 rule goes like this. If you decide against them and you decide for your work or for your business, will they still remember in 10 days, in 10 months, or in 10 years? If they don't even remember it anymore in 10 days, then probably your business or your career really had a priority at this point, and they're gonna be fine. If they still remember that you weren't there in 10 months, oh, then those are the toughest ones for me, those decisions, because 10 months is a long time, but it's also just 10 months. And if it's something really important, if they still remember in 10 years that I wasn't at their graduation, at their birthdays, at their whatever, there is no way for me that the business has priority. There are certain days blocked out in my calendar where my team knows that is the third 10, and there is just no way that I will give up that day. That time is dedicated to them only, because I don't want them to remember in 10 years that I wasn't there.
That is the best decision, or the best advice, in the sense that it really simplifies how to make a decision, how to set priorities. And I love the simplicity behind it. Thank you for sharing that. You've got just a plethora of information from your ABCDE to the CEO disease to the 10-10-10 rule. And I love that you also said to be interested, not interesting. There's so many just nuggets that you shared today.
Oh, thank you. You're fantastic. You make it easy, Catherine. Because the harder job from the two of us is yours. You have to ask good questions so that I can give you some answers. And it was the most wonderful conversation with you. Thank you very much for asking such thought-provoking and great questions.
I really appreciate you and your time. Sylvie, if someone wants to learn more about you and the immersive presentations and keynotes that you're preparing, the books that you're writing, or even the 10-10-10 rule, how do they connect with you?
Well, as you heard in the intro, my creativity when it comes to naming my company is not extraordinary. You find me with my first and my last name anywhere. It's my company name. It's all my social media outlets. It's my website. Just Google me. You can even Google that name with typos, because it's so unique that nobody else is out there who has a similar name. I hope that you maybe put it in the show notes. And here are two favors to ask. The first, if you connect with me somewhere on social media or reach out, please say hello and let me know that you come from Catherine's wonderful podcast. And just that Catherine doesn't have to do it, or maybe she does it afterwards. If you enjoyed this episode, how about you leave us some feedback somewhere in the notes or a testimonial for the podcast?
That is fantastic. Sylvie, you are a delight. I love getting to speak with you. Thank you for your time. Sylvie DeGusto, you are the founder and CEO of Sylvie DeGusto, found on the web at sylviedegusto.com. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the episode. If you like it, please subscribe, share this episode or this show with other people around you. The greatest form of a compliment is a referral. I really appreciate them. And if you think that you want to learn more about some of the work we're doing, I encourage you to reach out to katherinecanty.com. You can schedule a call or just continue to read articles and information that we post out there. Thank you so much for being here.